viaduct looms like a bird of doom as it ships and cracks. Where secrets lie in the border fires and the humming wires. Yeah, man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, past the mills, past the stacks. On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand. Wrap you in his arms, tell you that you've been a good boy. He'll rekindle all the dreams that took you a lifetime to destroy. He'll reach deep into the hole, heal your shrinking soul, but there won't be a single thing that you can do. He's a god, he's a man, he's a ghost, he's a guru. They're whispering his name through this disappearing land, but hidden in his coat is a red right hand. You don't owe no money, get you some. You don't have no car, get you one. You don't have no self-respect, you feel like an insect. Well, don't you worry, buddy, 'cause here he comes through the ghettos and the barrio and the barry and the slum. His shadow is cast wherever he stands, stacks of green paper in his red right hand.
This is the time. gutters on the ledge. Well, now sorrow, it comes a-stealing, and I'll cry, girl, but I'll come a-running straight to you, for I am captured straight to you, for I am captured once again. Gone the days of the swinging from the stars, for the sea will swallow up the mountains, and the sky will throw thunderbolts and sparks straight at you, but I'll come running straight to
runs this deep. Oh God, up to below. Oh God, up Satan, the Sandman's on his way. Hey, listen to the beating of their blood.
Listen to the beating of their blood. Sandman's mud. The Sandman's mud. The Sandman's mud. The Sandman's mud. And Black Rain come down. The Black Rain come down. Oh, water, water everywhere. Where no bird can fly, no fish can swim, no fish can swim. Until the king is born. Until the king is born. In Tupelo. Until the king is born in a Tupelo.
In a clapboard shack with a rubber tip.
Where the rain crashed down and it leaked within.
A young mother frozen on the concrete floor. And a bottle and a box and a cradle of straw.
Tupelo.
Oh, Tupelo. And a bottle and a box and a cradle of straw.
Saturday gives what Sunday steals. And a child is born at a brother's heels. Sunday morning a fist born dead. And a shoebox tied with a ribbon of red.
Tupelo. Ah, Tupelo. And a shoebox buried with a ribbon of red. Oh, the mama rock your little one slow. Mama rock your baby. Mama rock your little one slow. God help it.
Tupelo, the thing come down, the thing come down. The king will walk on Tupelo, the king will walk on Tupelo. The carry the burden of Tupelo, and carry the burden of Tupelo, and carry the burden of Tupelo.
Tupelo. That was Nick Cave. You didn't tune in to hear Nick Cave, but you're getting Nick Cave. Man, it's been a while since I've manned this board. Oh, back out intro. Never hurt anybody. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. This is the Second Avenue Shuffle. You're listening to Grow Radio, don't you know? Today, and it's a bright and shiny day down here in Gainesville, Florida. We're doing a top shelf interview with the Radon LP 28 with the very own Dave Rome. Could you say hi?
This is top shelf, people.
I mean, could you talk some more while I get your levels?
What's up, Dave? Replay Dave on the ones and twos. Yeah. This is Dave Rome coming to you from Gainesville, Florida. Some little house wedged between two apartment buildings and the AT&T calls. No, it's like a wire center. Massive wire center.
Yeah, we do all right. Down here's so much to get into. Where do we start? While we focus on the album, we're gonna start with the before you were named Radon. You had a myriad of names.
Yeah, we did. I should look in there for them all. Definitely, Akira was one of them, based on the manga, anime, what would you call that? Movie? Japanese movie?
Yeah.
We were the big gay dudes. Can't see that any of us were gay, but in the sexual sense, but definitely gay otherwise. We were those nutty Jews, I think, at one point. What else? Was there more? There was definitely more. Can't think of them.
Well, if you can't remember them, then...
They're gone forever.
They are.
If you can't pass it on to this archive, then...
Yeah, they're on paper somewhere. They were funny. They were very funny. Oh, the Vegetarians, I think. There's a couple more. I think that's all I got there.
And what made you decide to permanently name yourself Radon?
We had a song, and then Brent was like, you know, we should call it Radon. And I thought about it for a few days. And I'm like, yeah, it sounds a little too punk rock, a little too cliche. But what the hell? It's not the vegetarians or those nutty Jews or Akira or those the big gay dudes. So we went with that.
All right. So that seems like a perfect segue into the song. He said, is he hit the play button? Every time.
Straight profesh.
Top shelf people.
Yeah, straight.
Would you rank it? Can I say? Come closer. What can I say?
Where to start here, I guess. So you recorded that was the era where everybody recorded with Tommy, right?
Yeah.
It seemed like when I first moved here in 92, everybody told me, oh, you gotta go to Tallahassee.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a nice guy.
Super.
It's funny, like, that, like, I guess there was nobody really in town doing a lot of that stuff.
Not that we knew. You could go to, what's his name over here, but it was a cost of fortune.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, Mirror Image.
Yeah, you go to Mirror Image, and but you're talking about big bucks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was actually cheaper to drive to Tallahassee and do it with Tommy.
Yeah. And they had a cool setup in his room, in his house.
Yeah.
It's like living room style.
Right. And he put us up for the night.
Yeah. You recorded all in one day?
Recorded all in one day and then mixed it the next morning.
Okay.
And then took off back for Gainesville.
Right. And then that second session, that was done here, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was done out towards Newbury, out towards Newbury on Newbury Road. There's a dude who's a piano tuner who had his own studio, like out in his barn.
Right.
Sir Echo was his name. And so we drove out there because we didn't want to drive to Tallahassee.
Right.
And we had him, yeah. That was a session. There's a couple other tracks from that session that I would love to dig up if I could ever find him.
Right.
There's a version of Better Than I Am that I've always wanted to get my hands on again because it was hot.
Right.
It was smoking.
Smoking. And then you did, so let's talk about the record. This, and you recorded that with Rob.
Yeah.
Right.
Then we ran into Rob in town. I guess he had continued to develop his studio. And, you know, all his bands were fantastic. And we met him. And everybody started recording with Rob in town.
Right.
We did too, and that was the house on Main Street that they've since knocked down. This house was from like 1890.
Yeah,
and cool the city.
Although it was terrible lugging all your shit up the stairs.
Yeah, you had to go upstairs,
and it was like so tiny. And then like right at the end, you had to make that weird turn. Didn't like that. That house was pretty romantic.
I have to say that the city knocked it down to put up this stupid city hall, which looks horrible, and it's now a parking lot. They've knocked down all the most historic houses in Gainesville right downtown, these Victorian gems, and I don't know whose genius idea that was. I have to put that out here, even though nobody's ever going to hear this.
You never know. You never know.
It's a vent anyways.
Yeah. So you said that it's so funny. There's like a lot of stories about Radon, especially like the early days.
That's
like,
cool.
Like, yeah, there's like lots of like, I think it's just because of that time, it was, people didn't document as much, at least in Gainesville. So it's just like always like tales and legends I always heard.
That's the way it should be, man. That's the best way to do it.
Well, it's really tales, funny too,
legends,
because
secondhand.
Your band is so fascinating for me because I had never seen a band that was so, I don't know, enthusiastically embraced by the town.
Yeah.
You know, it was like wild when I moved here. It was like wild devotion already.
We were already going when you came.
Yeah, because I moved here in the summer of 92.
Right.
Like 7-inch had already come out. Y'all were like,
yeah.
Here, it was like an event when you played.
Right.
It's crazy. Anyways, one of the stories, of what, like with this record, like you said, there was an extra song when you recorded the In Your Home, what became In Your Home.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't there extra stuff with the record too? Or
with this first 7-inch?
With the 28.
Oh, with the record.
Like, is it just the 10 songs, or did you guys do more songs?
There is a couple more things. There's like a little poetry thing I did over a Nason of Ulysses bass line that Brent would just like jam onto, you know, just because he liked it, you know? And then I had Rob record it, and I put some little words thing over that I had, and I would love to hear that again too. But, you know, so many different technologies of recording have come that he's, you know, shelved. It's on a master somewhere that it would cost them big money to drag it back out and, you know, dig it back up, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. And, like, this record actually ended up taking quite a while to materialize.
Yeah, like everything we do, of course.
Because, like, you recorded it, in 94, something like that?
Maybe.
So you started it then, anyway.
Yeah.
And it didn't come out until 98 or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's like
a million remixes.
We had lost tapes.
Yeah. And then that was the era, too, where Rob, you had to kind of start over every time you remixed. So it was like,
oh, yeah.
He like zeroed the board out and was like, all right, well, let's start again.
Oh,
like, yeah.
Things have really gotten a lot better. And you know, part of that was a reason to like really rush through our next record, the Orange One, because we wanted to prove to ourselves, and I think us and Var together wanted to prove to ourselves that we could do something and do it quick and get it out, you know, just to make up for the fact that, yeah, there was many years where we were just sort of like in a bad communication haze between our band and what was going on with us. We were all moving in and out of town.
Right.
And Var, too, was doing so much other stuff.
Right, sure.
It was just hard, and lost tapes and different technologies.
Right.
No Idea was blowing up, though. I mean, No Idea had that warehouse. And
yeah, that late 90s was crazy time over there.
You guys were getting your stuff together.
It was like, the punk CD came into vogue, and like it just kind of exploded. No Idea exploded.
I mean, it was great to go over there and see all that happen and see everything on the wall and the boxes and the die-cut 7-inches. Those are exciting times.
Yeah, I mean, but you guys are such a big part of it. I mean, the Radon 7-inch is kind of what put No Idea on the map. You know,
thanks
for real.
I love to hear that, of course.
I mean, everything before was great, you know, in its own way, but it never, I think it didn't really resonate with people, but that 7-inch really did, and still to this day, I mean, it's one of the best things that No Idea has ever put out, if not the best. You know, so it's like,
I can't accept that, but you know what I mean. I'm like, very flattered, of course.
Number six, it's 006.
Yeah, that kicks ass.
But that one
we don't keep, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah. It's just that one is the one that, like, I think really kind of like, oh, hey, what's going on in this town? What are these people doing? I think that was the one that just resonated.
I'm glad that you guys have become so successful because it makes me look good, all right? So thank you for that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have many more questions about the record, but we should probably get into it.
Quickly, this
first jam, the lyrics weren't included in the layout. What was the reason for that? The intentional omission
for Lion to You? I didn't really have an intentional omission on that, but I have done that before for Wash Away on that Allied Records thing. I was too embarrassed to print their lyrics. That might have been the case on this too. I can't remember, but that would have been the reason, other than space, you know, to not print the lyrics, because they're pretty clear on this. You can hear exactly what I'm saying. There's a little like racy line in there too.
I do love the only hard feelings I have for you are in my front pocket. Yeah, that's like super clever.
Yeah, and now looking back on it, that's so innocent. Why would I even be worried about that? You know, and you know what I saw online? Some dude from Tampa had made a movie, and somewhere he had made a belt, and that's what it had on the belt. It had that line on the belt of his character.
Whoa!
I was like, wow,
that's awesome. All right, well, let's get into it. Here we go. Right on 28.
So many hits. This album's like a boxing match.
Hey, that.
Oof, man, sorry. Took my clever pills.
That song was co-written with Jeff Lunnan from the many bands of Fay Wray and my high school band, Minimum Wage. What is it?
Do you remember his exact contributions, or was it?
That chorus, that hook is Jeff's singing it. And yeah, I can't remember if I wrote the chords for that or not, but that was from when we were in high school. We had that, and then when I came up here to college, finished it up. But back to what we were saying before, what number was the Crimpshine record? That has to still sell like crazy.
The Crimpshine Mötley Crüe.
Wasn't there a, yeah, no ideas?
It was, that's three, I think.
I think Crankshaft's three.
I want to bootleg that and print it up.
I'm going to call it two.
Two?
As I publicly document myself.
Yeah. Two, I guess. Yeah. Well, Var didn't keep that one in print, and all three of the songs ended up on a record, the Crimpshine thing, so kind of somewhat became irrelevant, except as a collector's item, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So, like, and, you know, also, like, the Jawbreaker Sam I Am record definitely was a big thing, but, like, as far as, like, a original product, like, that Radon 7-inch, I think.
So, and like, Jawbreaker and Sam I Am weren't, you know, ours. Yeah. Radon's.
We belong
you
to you.
You gotta get Radon from the source. Yeah, so, up next is Live It Down, which
yeah, that was one of Brent's,
seems like a Brent jam,
songs that he wrote later on in this, right before we recorded this album. And I love the lyrics. It seems to sort of be, when I think of the lyrics, I think it's about the band somehow, because Living It Down, at that point we're sort of imploding. People were, you know, Brent was moving out of town, I was moving out of town at different times, and it was like, you know, we had this thing going, we could have done it, but you're gonna, from now on you gotta live it down.
Like the dynamic of having a three-piece with two songwriters, how often were you collaborating, or was it you wrote a song and...
As much as we could, yeah, but it's difficult. I'm sure you guys have tried it before. It's not as easy as it sounds, you know, to bounce stuff off of each other, trying to get out there to the warehouse and practice it. It's easier to just do it yourself, go into the studio, record it, especially when you're crunched for time, you know? But, yeah, I don't think I was any part of this. He brought this all himself.
And I'm trying to also put myself back then. Like, when you practiced, did you have, you know, a decent PA where you could both hear each other vocally?
Yeah, I'm sure we had a warehouse for a little bit with, I think, Less Than Jake and Dave Frank's band. It must have been maybe the Marlin. So, yeah, you know, you could hear stuff really well. Yeah, you crank it up, and you have a PA and drums. You can really practice.
Fantastic. Well, here it is. Live It Down. Son of a...
Lake Lime, 1966, he was 16. In Central Florida, there the drag line, played over the pit, and he got
Live It Down and Science Fiction. You were saying earlier that was one of the last songs you wrote for the, out of this batch.
Yep,
probably.
Yeah, I was working at the battery factory and going to school for metallurgical engineering, and we had to take a field trip to the phosphate mines, which was just amazing for me because they had this 6-story tall machine that would break up the overburden, which is like the dirt on top of this phosphate ore underneath it. And they would just drag it over this boom and bring it back. And the thing would actually walk like a dang 6-story tall robot, you know, from one side of the highway to the other, you know, as it was digging up different parts. And, you know, there's a picture on the record of the tailings, which is the stuff they can't use once they extract the phosphate. And it's just this phosphogypsum, which is the, they make a wallboard out of it too. But when they pull it out of the ground, it's full of water and they have no way of getting the water from in between the layers of clay. So it's, there's just mounds of it. You can see it when you're driving between Atlanta and Gainesville. There's just these gigantic mountains of phosphogypsum tailings just for miles and miles
just
around.
Stacked up on the
stacked
side,
up.
Yeah.
They have nothing to do with it. They don't know what the hell to do with it. They can't figure out how to get the water out of it. You know, all these researchers at the university are trying to figure out what the heck to do with it, how to do something with it, but they have no idea. So then they start having these giant sinkholes in them, and that's what that picture is.
Right.
You know, it looks crazy, that gigantic hole, but it's really in a mountain of ore tailings, you know.
I don't know if this is if it was on purpose or just kind of happened, but it strikes me as a lot of the early songs, Radon songs, there's almost like a Radon is almost like an entity. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of third person, like,
yeah,
talking about Radon as like a person.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of, and that song has it. The song Radon kind of has that vibe.
Yeah.
Too. Was that something that you guys were, that just happened?
Yeah, that's,
this is funny because it seems like a reoccurring character that pops up through the music.
Yeah, and I had actually had a friend of mine, Katie Van Zell, who does, she's a cartoonist, who's an illustrator, to draw up this character. And it's like a female superhero. She's a suburban death gas is like her weapon, you know, and she comes in through the windows of anybody, you know, the bad guys, you know, the typical suburban bad guys that she just kills. You know, that was my cartoon superhero concept of the character of Radon. And she appears again here. I can't remember exactly how, but yeah, and extended it here with the Radon daughters are like her sisters. You know, they're like, there's a team of them now, you know, it's like second level.
Oh, that's awesome. I think I want to get into the... So one of the myths about this record, or I'm sure there's... I know it's true, but I don't really know why. You recorded all the vocals in a bathtub, right? Isn't that the...
In the bathroom, yeah.
In the bathroom.
Because upstairs was the studio.
Right.
And then, you know, I really didn't want people looking at me while I was singing. So you could mic the bathroom downstairs. And, you know, Rob wanted me to say that, you know, I like to record with less clothes on than most people. and you can hear me throw my keys into the sink. That was like me trying to make a little sound effect to see what happened. And I just left it on there because I kind of liked it. And it also sounds, you can tell from some of the songs that you can hear that it's in a kind of like a tiled bathroom. It's not a great sound for vocals, but
there's like almost like a feedback off like the tub. On some stuff.
And Tommy's too. You recorded the vocals either in his bedroom or in the bathroom. So it's a great tradition. And Rob also wanted me to tell you that when he built the new studio, because he's got this unbelievable studio now in this 1920s Gainesville house. And he wired it so that you could sing in the bath. There's jacks in the bathroom, so you could sing in the shower just from me, just based on my own experiences.
Oh, the magic's on the tapes, man. And you never know when the magic's going to happen.
That's right.
So you got to be ready. So this Stepmother Earth, this is another Brent song.
Yeah.
So I know that Brent plays bass in the band, but he's also a guitar player.
Yeah, and he plays guitar on these records.
Okay, so like if it was... A song that he sings on, he probably plays guitar on it.
Yeah.
Then would you play the bass?
No.
Oh, no. He would just play the bass.
Yeah.
And you would do like a second guitar or something like that?
Sometimes I do play guitar. You know, I'm playing on the first 7-inch on a couple things, a couple solos, a couple rhythm tracks. But yeah, it's a mix. You know, it's a mix. And, you know, we didn't really spell it out on the album who was where.
Right, right.
But yeah, you never can tell. It's a mystery. All the good parts were me. Kind of the muffs were Brent.
All right, well, let's get into it.
I'm on the
that again. Gets wild in the studio. That was Audio Illusions.
Yep.
That Audio is Illusions. The tail end of side A. Flipping over to side B, you got that photo of Brent.
Mm-hmm.
Comically posed under a fallen, is that a pine tree?
Yeah, he's a big outdoorsman. That was somewhere up in the Carolinas. He used to talk to me about, Dave, you should go hike this trail. It's like 6 hours to the top. And I'm like, what? I am not doing that. He does some crazy stuff. Yep, that's him up there. Now he's out in Idaho Falls. And yeah, it's hard to get him out here.
Imagine he's got 6 hours of walking to do much of anything.
Yeah. Yeah, he's out there. But, he always goes up to, like, Yellowstone. He's got a house in Yellowstone also that he goes up to with his kid and goes fishing in the trout streams and stuff like that. We're playing Saturday night, which is 2 days away now, right? No, tomorrow night. And he's not going to be here for that, unfortunately, but he's going to come for Fest.
That is good news.
Yeah.
Speaking of radon and traveling, the other legend is just as radon was about to make it, they had the great Chapel Hill show lined up that was going to change the world.
Yeah, we were going to totally make it from that.
And what happened?
We got into a car wreck in Columbia, South Carolina, and spent a week in the hospital. And that was so we didn't make it to the show. It didn't quite make it to the show. We had a show with the Arches of Loaf. And yeah, we never made it there. And just came back, and that kind of put a crimp in our plans. And I was kind of like, I spent a week in the hospital, and the only thing that would come over to TVs was the baby channel for the hospital. So I'm like, you know what? I think it might have been the painkillers, but I was like, that looks like a sweet little life there. I really should reevaluate my priorities, and I don't know, maybe I'll do something more family oriented rather than do the band thing. I tried to stop, but I couldn't really stop playing. We still continued to play last shows every 6 months or whatever. Ever since then, really. I mean, that's 20 years ago, probably.
I believe that is one of the alternate titles for this album is Radon's Last Show of the Album.
That would have been cool. That might have been better than 28, which I really don't know what that was from. This is number 28. There's no idea 28, right?
Correct.
Yeah. It's sort of indicative of the amount of conversation we had going back and forth between No Idea and us at that point. We couldn't even figure out an album title. It was just hard to get out there to the warehouse, and it was hard to get, probably didn't even have a phone at that point. There was no cell phones, people. This was ancient times.
You didn't have cell phones, but you had the ability to write great songs such as this. Here's 2 Feet. This morning without our hearts, our blood dry.
was Feline Growth and 2 Feet. As you were saying, like Brent, yeah, he said his songs tend to be a little darker.
Yeah, that, like the music, especially that one.
Like, yeah, that one, the music is dark. I mean, the hook is crazy good.
Right.
Like, the vocal hook is really cool.
Yeah, I love playing those chords too.
Yeah, just everything of that song is cool. Like, just the melody is great. And then it is really dark.
That's on a 7-inch too. Split with, I think, Highway 66.
Awesome, because in the hardback jukebox, it was in there. And that song would get played, I don't know, 9 times a night.
Awesome.
I heard that song like a bazillion times.
Yeah, speaking of the hardback jukebox, man, that was like an icon in this town. That thing was so amazing. Just to have that here, and plus the hardback here is just like, you leave and you realize that that's a very rare occurrence right there.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's also like time and place, you know. It existed. It was made by the people that went there, you know. I mean, the building itself was kind of a dump. I mean, made it more romantic, but the people were, man, some of the shows I saw you guys play there, I mean, you were there, you know, in your shows.
Mm-hmm,
but
yeah.
Like, as a fan, just, I still have never seen a band like just so embraced. I mean, I've been going to shows forever. I mean, everybody has. But I would have to say that era of Radon, like, I've never seen a band so loved by their friends, by the town. But it was like, it's hard to like put into words. Like, it was just such a weird thing, because you know you had the 7-inch, and that's it.
Yeah.
And then all these demo tapes, but I mean, there was like 500 people singing every song.
Yeah.
And like, how did this happen?
It's
like
great.
And then you feel like, how am I not singing every song? So it just kind of like keeps vacuuming up new people. Do you know what I mean? Like, because when I first moved here, I didn't, you know, I, oh man, this band, okay. You go see them and you're like standing at the back. And then a year later, you're in the front, like, grabbing the mic, get out of the way, Jeff, you know, like, or whatever.
But hell yeah. The energy was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was like, was it kind of instantaneous when you,
guys? You know, I was spending so much time going to college and just trying to eke out the time to practice and get everything together. And then I'm like introverted and stage frighty, you know, so I would spend the whole week before just nervous about, you know, and feeling horrible about it, like really bad. Like, oh my God, I got to get up there and play and it's going to sound like crap. And I really want it to sound good. But then you get there. Yeah. And you're like, everybody, despite the hassle I went through all week, everybody's singing these songs. I feel incredible. And you feel like you're getting something for nothing, even though you've worked so hard for it.
It was funny, too, like that era, especially hardback days, and especially like after they sold the back part and they just made the front part, it was like the running joke was always like, well, how many songs are they actually going to get through before they just get trampled? You know, like before Bill's drums get knocked over and all the amps get turned off.
Yeah.
It was like everybody, all 500 people wanted to be in that little 5-foot space between the three of you.
Yeah.
And like just kind of like be in that bubble.
That felt great. You know, to play on the floor is my favorite, by far, the way to do it.
Right.
And you never get that. You know, I've never had that since.
Right.
That's so rare. And to be on stage for me is just awkward. I don't want people looking at me. And, you know, you lose that eye-to-eye connection with the audience. And it's just, it was so great at the hardback for that reason also.
Yeah. I mean, it was just, I don't know, like, just some of the vibes there. I mean, like, I think my favorite one was probably the Mohawk show, just because that was like,
yeah,
I didn't really know anybody then.
Yeah.
And it was like, or I had my own friends that weren't really people at the show. But seeing that was like, man, that's awesome.
Yeah, was it like Bobby Ebear's got a buzzer and it's just going through?
Let's do it.
Giving everybody a Mohawk.
Yeah, I definitely stole that years later at a Stress Face show. But that,
cool.
I remember just being like so enamored with, I mean, it was just like this event. It was like so funny. I mean, it was, you know, people there that never really heard you guys. They're like, this is the place to be, right? It was like that kind of vibe.
We had a great cake fight on a birthday, too, there. I mean, imagine that, a club you could go to, bring a birthday cake, and the club owner doesn't care that you're having a cake fight in his restaurant, and he has to clean it all up, you know. You'll help out, but
that
place was great.
We get back to the record a little bit. I don't know if it was a conscious decision or what, but when you guys played live, the songs were like really, really fast. Like when you listen to the live album that Kurt did.
Yeah, too fast.
Really fast.
I don't know what happened.
That's like Land Speed Record style.
Yeah.
You know, really jittery. And then this record is like not sedate, but it's pretty slow.
Right.
Like not slow in a bad way, because that sometimes has like a bad connotation, but it's really steady. Because like live, especially that era, everything was so like...
It's painfully fast. I mean, you can't hardly listen to that live record, and I'm just screeching like crazy. I cringe every time I listen to it, and I hate that it's on the CD. But I love that Kurt put it out. Kurt Berger put that thing out, and I was in love with that. But yeah, I think it was probably Ephedrine, maybe that Bill was really playing fast. I shouldn't call that Bill, because I was popping Ephedrine for no reason whatsoever, because it's the dumbest drug ever. But yeah, that was probably what you hear on the live record. Too fast for sure. Yeah.
So you kind of made a conscious effort to play it slower, or just that's how it was supposed to be in the first place?
I think we were just jacked up on the adrenaline, and that's why it came out so fast. Whereas nowadays we're old and our hearts are slower, and everything sounds too slow to me now, and I think to everybody else too. It's like, oh, this is dragging.
This next song I always found interesting, just in the sense that, like, I don't know. It's like a political song almost, like the lyrics to it.
You're talking about Haiti.
Yeah.
And yeah. It's even awesome. Tried to be.
It's really cool. Like the sentiment is amazing. And I love the last line. You know, it's amazing. It's just funny because it's not really, it doesn't seem like part of your band's output for the most part.
Yeah.
It's mostly, you know, self-referential jokes and kind of silly, lighthearted.
College party stuff.
Yeah. Well, not just in general.
When I think about Radon, I think about that. It's like we're either too serious or we're too jokey. We never really hit the sweet middle spot.
But the lyrics are amazing on this song. It's just funny that it's just interesting to me that they are so direct.
Yeah.
And the sentiment's amazing.
Because you're from Miami. I mean, I would leave college and go home to Miami for the holidays or for summer. And, you know, some stuff was going on in Miami that was not happening in the rest of the country at all.
I do remember the first time I ever saw, like, the Coast Guard shooting boats with a water cannon so that people didn't make it to shore.
It's just some crazy stuff. And that's mind-blowing,
because it's like in public.
Yeah.
Because the law is if you put one foot on the ground, you're then you citizen. Have to have a trial. Okay. Well, they can't deport you immediately.
Okay, yeah.
But if they could scoop you up in the water before you hit land, they could just send you away. So they would have this little patrol boat with a water cannon that would blow up these little rafts. And like, you could go to the beach. I mean, I only saw it once, but I heard tales of it all the time.
Right.
But like, you could see like a boat cruising over to blow up this raft, and they scoop the people out of the water and they disappear.
And I think the Miami Herald did a good job of covering it, because to me, the impression was that there was such a difference between the way they treated the Haitians versus the Cubans or anybody else that came. You know, and it was just obviously prejudiced, you know, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So yeah, and me thinking about songs and songwriting and lyrics, I love the old political songs. I love the Yippie era 60s protest songs. I love, you know, going back to Pete Weaver and all the old folk songs and Bob Dylan. I love all that stuff. So this was my chance to do that.
It's amazing. I mean, it's interesting because it sticks out to me, especially on this record, because the lyrics are so direct.
Yeah, and one other thing, there was a Haitian artist that I'd seen in Miami, Dadu Pasquette, and this guy was just the smoothest guitar player in the world. He had a piece of silk over his shoulder when he played it. He sat on a stool, and it was just, the Haitian music is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So that was another aspect to this that was in my head. At the end of the song, I mentioned him. I don't know if it made the lyric sheet or not, but it's supposed to be, this is a music revolution, you know, this is idealistic college bullshit, but that's where my head was at.
Cool. All right, well, let's get into it. This is, this is Haiti.
Cover up what we caught, and in monsters shallow soul. A front that blocks off the side of the spectrum of life that tries to polarize a whole. Polarize a whole. Tries to polarize. Polarize a whole. To polarize a whole. Polarize a whole. Tries to polarize. Polarize a whole. That's okay.
The next track here is Grandma's Cutie, which, as you kind of alluded to, that you never hit the mark of serious and dark versus jokey.
Yeah.
And this song seems to have everything about Radon the bands wrapped up into one. It's got the fantastic sing-along bits. It's got the darkness and the, you know, the little engine that should but just somehow can't kind of vibe.
Cool. Yeah. This was the first song I ever wrote. When I tried to write, I was up at my grandma's house in New Jersey for the summer. I had escaped Miami. And this was the first time I ever tried to write a song. This was it. And I think, to me, the riff is straight off of one of the Husker Du songs. It just slowed down. It's definitely a lot of Bob Mould influence in my little guitar thing going on there. And yeah, I don't know where I got all these words from. Part of it was going to the beach in New Jersey, to the piers, and being on the roller coasters, and just a bunch of other shit in there, you know. And I was about my family. It's about my uncles and aunts, and my uncle was dying of emphysema, and it's all wrapped up in there. That was it.
Trying to think of a way to brighten that.
I would ride my bike next door to Cape May and get him some Burger King Whoppers, which is the only thing he would eat. So yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah. And all these kids from Ireland would come over to work on the piers, like thousands of Irish kids. There's this weird vibe in Wildwood, New Jersey, because you have all these American influences of Puerto Ricans guys and Italian guys and black guys, and they're all so proud of what they are and coming down from Philadelphia, New Jersey. And then you got these Irish kids that come over and just go to clubs and drink and fight all night long. And it was just it's just a weird mix of crazy, you know, popcorn-y, cheesesteak-y, pizza, riding roller coasters thing. I got nothing else to say.
Well, let's rock it. Grandma's Cutie.
This could only be happening here. My head on the TV set and my mouth on a beer. Oh, a loneliness. Loneliness and death. Carry the breeze.
Yeah, the Cha-Cha-Chas, that's a J-Dog classic right there. South Florida classic. And the hook on that song is from Jesus Diaz. I stole that from him, as something he had said when we were younger back in Miami. And as a matter of fact, when I was in college, I used to take all of the stuff that I heard my friends saying that I loved, and I'd put it on a piece of paper on my wall. And every day I'd come home and I'd just write another thing up there. And that's where I stole all my lyrics from. This might not be any of my stuff on here.
You documented that you're like the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Of 1991, Gainesville, Florida.
Really good word at on the playing street. Harmonic parts on guitar.
Harmonics like harmonics.
Yeah.
I love harmonics. Van Halen style harmonics for sure. Yeah. And I've always tried to continue to do that because I think it could go further. I still want to do it. I still want to do other stuff with harmonics and music. Yeah.
Yeah. It's your ability to do that while you've got, you know, someone climbing on your back and you're wearing a dreadlock wig or whatever. It's.
Yeah, you gotta pop it with your thumb. Yeah, there's definitely a practiced art to that for sure, and it sounds impressive. At least it did 20 years ago. Now it doesn't sound like shit.
So we got the middle-aged Rasta guy left.
Yeah, I think I read where some guy said that it took him 6 years to like this song, and I've read another guy say that you know what happened to the end of this record? It just petered out and died. But I always liked the song, even though it's really like sparse and it sounds like all the energy's gone out of the room, and it's just jazzier for me. I just like the jazzy feel of it. Plus the Rasta guy story, it's pretty, you know, obvious.
You'd be better at telling it than me.
Yeah, there's a guy, there's a middle-aged, everybody in Gainesville knows this guy because he jogs like 20 miles a day. And he holds his hands up in the air, and you know, the story is he's like blessing the cars that go by or cursing them. I've read a lot about him. There's been a lot of stuff done on him. He's from like North Florida, I think.
I've only seen him
here. He's actually ran from Gainesville to Jacksonville. That's how much this guy runs.
Wow.
So yeah, this is about him. Because he's, you know, you got to write a song about that character.
Yeah, iconic guy.
Speaking of writing, and to completely derail the Rasta guy song, have you read the book that Travis and Aaron did?
Yeah, I loved it. I couldn't believe it.
Can we get your thoughts?
Surprise to me. Oh my God, it's like the greatest surprise, you know, in your musical life to have somebody write a little 50-page book about your record. I mean, come on, that's amazing. Especially, I know I've been reading Aaron Kalmbus' zine since he started. We're about the same age as me and Aaron, and I think he started when he was 14 or 15, and I've been reading them since then, and I always loved them. I loved the maps and stuff he would draw, the vagabond life he was portraying, and to have him write about my stuff, wow, it was huge. And Travis too, we've been friends forever, and just to hear his inner thoughts about, you know, because he's really kind of a shy guy, to hear what he thought about us and the fact that he was willing to put it on paper, it was a huge like a reinflation of my ego after 10 or 20 years of it being, you know, sucked out dry with family life and work. And yeah, it was great to hear. And it really inspired the band to get back together last year and try to, you know, make one more album. That's what we're in the middle of doing. We're trying to really slowly, one song at a time, putting together another 10 songs to try to put out in 2041.
2041. Are we going to hear any of those new songs when you're playing these next couple times?
Look, if you're going to come on Saturday, it's going to be half new stuff and covers and half old stuff. So, that's what it's going to be.
That's Saturday at Lucy's?
If Bill shows up to practice tomorrow.
Hey-o.
Fingers crossed.
Maybe even if he doesn't, we'll just do it. Me and Mike played through him yesterday, and we got him, man. We want to do it.
Well, all right. Here is middle-aged Rasta guy ending out the album 28 by Gainesville's own Radon. Radon, Radon.
Bye-bye, people.
Oh, Dave, I might roll.
The middle-aged Rasta guy jogging around Gainesville. The middle-aged Rasta guy jogging around Gainesville. There's a middle-aged Rasta guy. Kinda like Pac-Man.